now.
What is up? What is happening? How are all the things? You are hanging out with Cheryl and Natty on the Shade of Strong podcast, where we are supporting Black women and reimagining strength, rewriting narratives, and celebrating the awesomeness of Black women in all of our raw, unfiltered safe. Hey, Natty. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
I will do. Listen, this is the first episode of the new season.
Yay
us. I don't even know what season this is. I kind of lost count or whatever, but I know we've been doing this since 2018. So what's this?
That's 6 years.
6 years.
So sixth season. The fifth, yeah. For me, if we want to get technical.
Oh, yeah, the fifth for you, because we started out in 2018 with the name Get Naked, and that just went left so quickly.
You could not do that now at all. That wouldn't even get off the ground now.
Initially, I was talking to women about getting emotionally naked, but then I started getting these messages from men seeking Black women. So that's how we ended up with the name change to Shades of Strong, because it was just like I had to shut it all down, do some brainstorm and pray about it and say, okay, God, what's next? And so then we did Shades of Strong, and then Natty came on, and here we are, 6 years.
Here we are.
So yeah, welcome to the first.
It's hard to believe it's been that
season.
Many years.
I know. We've been doing the things. We've been doing the things.
Half a decade is a minute.
It don't even seem like it, though, for real.
It doesn't. It really and truly does not.
We said all that to say, welcome to the first episode of the new season. We have so many great conversations waiting for y'all. Y'all, they're going to be so good. Mm-hmm. I really feel like in my spirit, Natty, that this is going to be our best season yet. And I say that because all the guests that we've interviewed thus far, they have been so amazing. They have brought in like different perspectives, you know, on the various topics and stuff. And so, I don't know. I just feel like this is going to be our best season. Gonna be our best season yet, like for real. I do. So y'all stay tuned for all that. We got a lot of good conversations coming in the coming month. Anyway, with that said, we are diving into the topic of fostering a discipline of humanizing ourselves. If you're listening to this episode or any other episodes and you have not joined our email list and you want to go deeper into these conversations or you just want to connect with us, hop over to the link in the show notes, join the email list. You can also connect with us on social media, which is strong across all platforms. All right, let's get into it. So in today's conversation, we are going to be talking about fostering a discipline of humanizing ourselves. I think the first step in doing that is acknowledging the fact that we are flawed, imperfect humans. Mm-hmm. We were not created to do all the things for all the people. And as a card-carrying member of the collective, and by collective, I mean Black women, mm-hmm. I think I can confidently say that we have not fully embraced that we are flawed, imperfect humans. I feel like if we had Natty, Shades of Strong wouldn't exist. Mm-hmm. If we as a collective have fully embraced the fact that we are human and that we are imperfect and that we are flawed, I don't think Shades of Strong would exist. And here's how I know that. Because remember when we were like on social media and we were just seeing people saying like, I don't want to be strong anymore. And so, and you and I were initially taken aback by it. But when we began to like dig deeper into it, we were hearing why they were saying that. And they were basically saying like, I don't want to do strong this way anymore. So I think it wasn't necessarily that they were rejecting being strong or rejecting strength itself. I think they were primarily rejecting the expectations and the pressures that come with being ridiculed for expressing their emotions, trying to have their life together, or making it appear that they have their life together, like not being able to fall apart, not being able to rest, you know, all of the things. So Natty, what do you think? Why do you think there are these internalized beliefs that we have to be and do all things? And what do you think is going to take for us to kind of like unlearn those things, the pressures that society and our family and friends have put on us to be and do all things?
Before I start, let me just say that we talked about making this a topic a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Because I just had the light bulb in my head. Let's talk about this. And I don't really remember how or why I came up with it, but I just knew it was important. And it's not because it's like, oh, I didn't have thoughts. I had all kinds of thoughts. So I'm going to try and recover some of those things now. But first of all, before I even start with that, I wasn't the least bit taken aback by all those women over the years saying they didn't want to be strong no more.
It was just me.
Yeah. I remember, I also was saying, I don't want to do this shit no more. I'm like, nah, I reject it.
In the name of-
I really did, because I was so, especially I feel like in 2019, 2020, I was, not to say that I'm not still, but I was pretty angry. And I think there were lots of realizations that I hadn't had yet that were kind of hitting me in the face. And that was after many years, probably since around 2012, 2013, of starting to have more realizations about a lot of different things, or maybe since 2011. So I was already pretty angry. And one of the things that I definitely was sick of was being told personally, this is just me, about how strong I was. And I got to where I was so angry about it. I was like, I don't feel respected. I don't feel respected at all. I literally feel, I mean, I feel invisible, and in a different kind of way, invisible, the kind of ways that you feel when you're a Black woman or a woman of color and you're out on the street or whatever, and people are like bumping into you because they expect you to move out the way and you don't move out the way.
Yeah.
Because they don't really see you. That's one kind of invisible. And I was already kind of fed up with that. So I was like, screw y'all, I'm not moving out the way no more. You need to move out my way. You see me coming. I know you're not blind, you know?
Yeah.
This was a different kind of invisibility, though. And I was just like, you're telling me how strong I am and how much you admire me. But I know for a fact that if I were down and out, you would not lift a finger to support me. It was kind of like people will tell you something to your face, but behind your back there, they feel a different way about you. And
yeah.
Very fake and that kind of thing. That was what started the anger for me. I was like, I'm sick of being told this. I don't want to be told this anymore by any doctor. I don't want to be told this anymore in any of my circles. I fully reject this. So I definitely was not on board by 2019. Definitely not anymore.
Uh-huh.
What I have come to realize now, and this is where we get to the humanizing part, is part of why we feel so, I don't want to say ambivalent, but why we feel so many of us feel so on the fence, I guess, about this whole thing,
mm-hmm.
is because we haven't really allowed ourselves to be in our full humanity.
Right. Exactly.
Last year, I think it was, we started making these declarations, my strong is, and I want to say that I said my strong is human, like freaking human, like fully human.
Yeah.
Because we are supposed to be superwomen. We're supposed to be superheroes. We're supposed to be Marvel Comics characters. We're supposed to be Storm or Nubia or, you know, like these characters that are literally fictional characters. We're supposed to be Shuri from Black Panther, you know, well, Shuri's mom. We're supposed to be the people who never break. We don't even bend. We're statues, so to speak. And when we're statues, people can symbolically prop us up on a pedestal and at the same time dishonor the statue because they don't really respect us or see us. They don't see us. And I say that because in other communities, not only does it seem like women are more seen in a manner of speaking.
Yeah.
Because, you know, patriarchy and misogyny is definitely a thing everywhere. But some women are even infantilized, and that also is dehumanizing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But in a very small way, people are running to their defense,
yeah.
running to help them, running to try and have their back or support them. Meanwhile, we're all over here talking about we got, you know, I ain't got nobody but me. I gotta, you know, take care of me, because we feel alone out here. Like no one is supporting us. That is where being told or being made into the strong, independent type has gotten us. And that's why you hear a lot more younger women saying, this is killing us. Like, this is literally killing us. Like, I have high blood pressure. Other people have autoimmune disease, you know, those kinds of things. Because having to be strong all the time is physically harming us. So part of humanizing ourselves means to actually recognize that, which I think a lot more women are doing, actually recognize that, acknowledge that, and start putting into place things that help us feel and remember how human we are. Not just taking care of ourselves, because self-care has really been bastardized. Like, oh dear God, I really hate it. It didn't start out this way. But actually taking legitimate care of ourselves, me making sure I don't forget to take my medicine, me making sure I get a lot of rest, me making sure that I'm drinking a lot of water, stuff like that. Also being able to recognize and acknowledge in a very honest way our flaws. Like, oh, well, I have a tendency to jump to conclusions, and the conclusions are always the worst case scenarios. And then I try and go into autopilot, trying to fix everything. And that's not a healthy trait. And I say acknowledging these things in an honest way, because another way we dehumanize ourselves, if you're like me, is sometimes you take too much of the burden and you end up beating yourself up. And that's not it either. It's really being as objective and as honest as you can. You're not a piece of shit because you made a mistake. You're not trash because, oh, I tend to jump to the wrong conclusions or jump to the worst case scenarios. I just noticed that I do this, and I'm going to work on not doing this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to work on next time something comes up, I'm not going to panic. I'm not those kinds of things. That's the way we start to humanize ourselves. And that's the way we start to acknowledge, hey, wait, strength isn't about never falling apart and never needing help. That's not what strength is. Strength is actually being able to see myself in the mirror and see a full flesh 3D human being and recognize that I have just as many, I have flaws the same way as I have wonderful positive traits. I can admit what those things are. I can work on not doing some of the more harmful coping things that I try to do to cope. And I can also try to cope less by actually asking for help when I really do need it. I think those are the things, some of the things that we can do to start really embodying ourselves fully as humans. And the more we do that, the more we as a community can support each other, regardless of whether anyone else is going to.
Absolutely. When you were talking, it kind of like reminded me of the meditation that I was doing this morning. And so in my meditation, I was doing like the body scan meditation, right? And as I scanned each part of my body, I started thinking about all the ways I dehumanized myself in the name of being strong. And it struck me how these expectations can chip away at our self-worth and our humanity. So I thought it would be fun to kind of explore some of the ways we unintentionally dehumanize ourselves by using the body scan method. Mm-hmm. And so what I wanted to do was, you know how the body scan usually just focuses on like physical sensations, but instead of us focusing on physical sensations, I was thinking maybe we could focus on the emotional and mental burdens we carry in each part of our body. And how, and just kind of pay attention to how we dehumanize ourselves in the name of being strong, like from our head, from our throat, and just kind of go through all that. I tell mine and then you tell me.
That sounds like a plan.
The goal is to reclaim our humanity from each part of our bodies, because there are parts of our bodies that we betray all in the name of being strong. So as we go through the body scan, I want our listeners to just pay attention to the emotions and the burdens that they are carrying in each part of their body and ask themselves, how am I dehumanizing myself in the name of being strong with this part of my body? And most importantly, how can I reclaim my humanity and redefine what it means to be strong in a way that honors my true self from head to toe? Let's do the thing. So you kind of already touched on the mind part, because I can tell you, for me, like, my mind in most cases is like a runaway train. It never stops. It's always racing ahead to see what's going to happen next, trying to figure out all the things. It overanalyzes. It's like it just gets stuck in this loop, and I obsess over all things. I obsess over things I can't change. I start playing out scenarios in my head. And like Maddie said, more cases than not, the scenario is always going to be worst case scenario. And then there's the hypervigilance that keeps me on high alert all the time. Like, I'm constantly waiting for the next bad thing to happen.
Waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I'm always waiting for the other shoe to drop. In my mind, I feel like that's how I dehumanize myself. And when I tell y'all, it's exhausting.
Yeah, it is.
It is so exhausting. Like, always feeling like I got to be on guard. Even like when I'm in a safe space, you know, even like if I'm among, surrounded by people that I love and trust, like, I feel like I always got to be on guard, like always on the lookout. So I think a lot of that, it's for me, it's like mental noise, and I get overwhelmed by my own thoughts.
Yeah.
And so I think for me that it dehumanizes, because like, I'm always in that overthinking, obsession, hypervigilance, and it takes a toll on my sense of humanity. I start to doubt myself, even with Shades of Stone. Sometimes I don't want to get on the podcast because I don't want to get on to record because I'm overthinking everything. Like, am I good enough to have this particular conversation? Do I have the knowledge to have this particular conversation? So it's like I'm constantly in battle with myself when I let my mind do all the overthinking that it does. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's how I dehumanize myself with my mind. And you kind of touched on it too, Natty, but if you want to share some of yours.
Yeah, very, very, very similar. I love when we have conversations like this where we come up with our own metaphors to describe what we're going through. And I love that image of a runaway train.
Yes. Like it never,
because it's like, it just never stops. I do also tend to think of worst case scenario first. Mm-hmm. I do also have a tendency to lean into hypervigilance. My mind, the way I have described it as of late, and by as of late, I mean the last couple of years, one of three ways, but the most relevant way I would describe it in relation to this is it's kind of like that movie, The Mist. I think it's based off a book written by Stephen King. In The Mist, basically, there's a deep, deep fog that comes over the small town. And there are people that are kind of stuck in a grocery store because you can't see. Like, it's so foggy, you can't see. And there's like a monster out there, and people try to get out and they get captured or whatever. But the main premise is that the mist is so thick, you can't see anything. That's what my mind feels like. And when my mind, when I feel like I'm in that kind of a fog, I start, you mentioned mental noise. It's mental noise for me in a sense of like alarms going off everywhere, because I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what's happening. You know, I can't see the future. What am I going to do? How can I fix this? Or and since I don't have the answers and I'm not able to kind of come up with answers as quickly as I would like, it feels like that kind of mist where I can't see what's in front of me. And I need to be able to see what's in front of me.
Right.
The gag is, life is not that way. Life doesn't behave the way you want it to. Sometimes you can't see what's in front of you. And sometimes you really do have to sit with uncertainty. It's the uncertainty that bothers me. So the way that I have dehumanized myself mentally many times is by A, trying to make sense of the uncertainty, try and force myself to see through all of the fog and see what's in front of me. And then when that doesn't work, I beat myself up because I wasn't strong enough to come up with a solution or figure something out. And that's extremely dehumanizing, because as a human being, you should be able to relax. You should be able to trust. You should be able to, you know, if this applies to you, have faith. And I've done it in the past. I'm like, no, I'm just going to have faith. But even my faith was very much white knuckle kind of faith. I'm going to make myself have faith through this. But my mind was always in that fog of like, yeah, but what? Yeah, but what if? But what about what they didn't? And the questions never stop coming. Even if I tell it to like stop or be quiet, it's the alarms don't stop ringing. But as a human being, we have to be able to sit with uncertainty. We have to be able to sit in uncertainty. We have to be able to acknowledge and admit that we don't have all the answers. We don't know everything. And sometimes we may have answers and we may still make the wrong choices. And those will be mistakes, and we're going to have to admit that they were mistakes. But when you're strong, you don't admit any of that. You don't acknowledge any of that. You certainly don't sit with uncertainty. You certainly don't sit in discomfort. You're like, no, I've got to do something to fix it. and we try and fix it. And a lot of times that doesn't work out. Sometimes it works out. And unfortunately, because of those few times when it does work out, we think that's what we're supposed to keep doing. And I did that for far too long. And it's not helpful. It's not healthy. Like, it's literally not healthy physically.
It's not. It's, like I said, it's exhausting.
It's exhausting. And your body will pay the price.
But on the other side of the coin is when we're able to face our fear, challenge the negative thought, that's when we begin to humanize ourselves. Because despite our flaws, our insecurities, our imperfections, we're still human. So if you can get to a place where when the overthinking and the hypervigilance comes up, if you can get to that space where you challenge, like, I think that my therapist taught me this. What I do is I ask myself, what do I know to be true about this thought? And so that's me challenging the thought. And so if we can get to that point, I think that's where we begin to humanize ourselves in our mind.
Yeah.
Now, moving right along to the throat. Similar to my mind, it becomes a battleground too. Like, I often find myself silencing my true thought and my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself censoring myself out of fear of being judged or rejected. So I'm constantly with a lump in my throat, swallowing my words and hiding the parts of myself that people may not be willing to accept.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in conversations where I might disagree with somebody, and I've gotten a lot better at this, let me say this, because now I'm a little more vocal about things. But there was a point, like, if I disagree with someone in a conversation, I might stay silent, you know, because I want to avoid conflict. And even though I know deep down inside what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling is valid, I'm not going to say it because, one, they may not accept it. Two, it may cause, you know, some riffraff. So I'm just like, I'll silence myself for that. But or even in situations where somebody has said something that hurt my feelings or offended me, I might laugh it off rather than saying, hey, I didn't like that you said that, or I don't like how or something like, when you said that, it made me feel. I would just laugh it off, you know. And I still do that sometimes, but I'm working on it. I think that's it for my throat. Those are the things that I struggle with. It's primarily silencing myself. But like I said, I've gotten a little better with that. I've gotten a little better with speaking up for myself. And so when I'm silencing myself, I think that's a form of dehumanizing myself. Like, girl, just say the thing. You know?
Absolutely. That definitely is a form of dehumanizing ourselves. I too have gotten a lot better. I feel like I was not always this way. I think as a child, there were times when I expressed myself and faced harsh consequences. So I, as someone who is not averse to conflict per se, but doesn't want to get, I'm not the type of person who's going to start anything.
Right.
Like, if we end up in it, we're in it.
Yeah.
I'm not that person that's going to start the beef. I'm not that person that's going to start the shit. I'm not doing that.
I'm reactionary. I react to what you
mean. I'm more reactionary. I'm very much a don't start none, won't be none type of person.
Exactly.
So that isn't someone who is, that's someone who doesn't really like being in conflict, but isn't necessarily avoiding conflict all the time. As a child who was certainly willing to not avoid conflict, facing the harsh consequences for expressing my feelings sometimes. And I don't mean that the harsh consequences were physical violence or anything like that,
right,
necessarily, but sometimes just being either gaslit or being shamed for what I said, or even being mocked, or being more socially isolated as a result of what I might have said or how I might have expressed myself. I think that's what started an ongoing thing. And then as an adult, sometimes it's like, yeah, I'd rather keep the peace because, yeah, I don't want to start anything. I don't want to start a giant thing. If someone starts something with me, then I tend to blow up. And then that's what's like, oh, she's so angry. She's so this, she's so that.
Exactly.
So I'm like, I don't want to be seen as that person all the time. Yeah. So I'm like, just like you, someone might say something. I'm like, it's not that big of a deal. So I'll just laugh it off.
I just, yep.
It's not that big of a deal, so I'll just let it ride.
Mm-hmm.
The gag is it actually, it's a much bigger deal than what I was letting on, even to myself. So in more important relationships, relationships with family, relationships, close friendships, things like that, I had gotten into a habit of, you know, like biting my tongue, swallowing my teeth. I'd swallowed so many of my teeth at some point that it was like, oh no, this is like a volcano about to erupt. I can't keep doing this over things that aren't that big of a deal. I have to actually speak up. And that was very, very difficult to start doing after having not done it for a very long time. Because also, there were times where if I spoke up, the consequences could be more harsh because these were situations like at my job or in, at the church, stuff like that. And I'm like, wow, it just was not worth it. It was not worth it to silence myself. I should have let it fly and let the chips fall where they may. Cause I'm not even sure I would have gotten fired at my job. I don't know that, but there's a very real fear of that.
Oh,
especially
absolutely.
I'm in my 30s. There are a lot of things that I know now that I didn't know then. There are a lot of things that I do not care about now that I cared about then. So yeah, I wasn't willing to do that at that time.
Yeah.
That's not the way things would play out now just because I'm a very different person. But yes, the biting of the tongue and the swallowing of the teeth is definitely dehumanizing because it's dishonest. It's just plain dishonest. I'm not vilifying any of us for doing that.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
I take strong offense at, I've seen some discourse last year that people were saying that people pleasing is extremely manipulative behavior. And I take strong offense to that. So I'm not saying that biting your tongue and not speaking up and silencing yourself is dishonest in a sense of like, oh, now you're the villain because you're a liar. That's not what I mean.
No.
I mean, you're not being honest with
yourself.
Honest
with yourself, absolutely. Because you're not speaking and standing in your truth.
Right. So you're not humanizing yourself because embodying our humanity means we are able to be honest with ourselves, objectively honest in a healthy way. So we're correcting that now. And it feels a lot better. It feels the burden is very much lighter.
And it's a process.
There's still burden.
It is a process.
No, it doesn't happen overnight.
It takes practice.
I'm talking a years long thing here.
Absolutely.
This is a years long thing. But as it keeps going, and I've said many times on this podcast, all kinds of things are practice. And so I think one of the most human things we can do is really embrace the concept of practicing, not to make perfect, not to win a prize. I'm talking to myself here, not to get the best grade or anything like that, but just to be able to develop a proficiency in something that's going to help us with our overall well-being. Practicing is always good. So yeah, like we're just one day at a time doing better about actually speaking up. And as we speak up, we dehumanize ourselves less and less.
I want to bring this up, and then we're going to move on to the heart. But one of the things that I used to do, as far as conflict goes, I would tell myself, like, if I'm in the middle of something and it's starting to get heated, I would always tell myself, I'm going to walk away to protect my peace. But like you were saying, like, I wasn't being honest with myself. I wasn't walking away to protect my peace. I was walking away because if I say the thing, it's not going to be pretty. And my therapist brought this to my attention because she asked me one time when I was telling her about a situation. She said, did you walk away to protect your peace? Were you being silent to protect your peace? Or were you using your silence as a weapon?
As a weapon, yeah.
Ooh, okay. So even in that, when you are silencing yourself, like I think you can also ask yourself, why am I silencing myself? And try to get to the root of why you're doing it. And when it comes to conflict for me, I always try to make sure that I'm operating from a place of love and resolve. And so if I can keep that in the forefront of my mind, I feel like I don't have to silence myself often because I'm going to choose my words carefully to say the thing that I need to say. And I'm going to try and make sure that it doesn't come out as harsh and unloving. And I'm kind. So
yeah,
I'm working.
Examining
I'm working on it. Yeah. I'm working.
Yeah. Examining our motivations is extremely important because like your therapist said, We are either doing it to protect our peace. That's a very real thing. We're doing it to use it as a weapon. That's also a very weird, very real thing. I would submit that there's even a third reason. And it's been a reason for me many times, especially when I was a kid. We're literally just doing it because we're afraid. It's out of fear.
Oh, yes. Yes. And fear. Oh, my gosh. It is so powerful.
Fear of conflict.
So powerful. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the mind. That's the throat. Moving on to the heart. And let me just tell you, the heart for me has gone through some things, honey. She has gone through some things. And when I tell you, she has shut herself off from love. She has shut herself off from connection because she doesn't want to be hurt again. She has built walls around protecting herself. Like, she has done the things.
Yes, she has.
Done the things because she tried to protect herself. Like, she's like, ain't nobody getting in here. But as I have grown, as I am evolving, as I am on a healing journey, I am slowly taking down the walls and I'm opening up my heart and allowing myself to love again, allowing myself to experience love, not just like in romantic relationships, but just like in general. Because when somebody hurt me, let me tell you, baby, your girl shuts down. She shuts all the way down. I push people away when they get too close. When I see they trying to be my friend, I'll be like, no. We're associates. We're not friends. I remember when I was working on my last job, this new girl came in and we were like one of the few black females there. And so she was just like trying to get close to me and she was like inviting me out to lunch. And I remember going to another person who was actually my friend in the office. And I was like, I think she's trying to be my friend. I'm not down for that, you know, because I was very, very careful about who I would let in. And it was because I had been betrayed, you know, by other Air Force friends. And so I was just like, look, I got a couple people in here. You know, I'm trusting them with my heart. I'm not about to let nobody else in. And so in essence, I was isolating myself from people because I had built up these walls just trying to protect my heart because, again, fear, I'm afraid of being hurt again. And I just wouldn't do it. And so in doing that, I wasn't allowing myself to be vulnerable. I wasn't allowing myself to experience the love from other people. I wasn't allowing myself to let other people in. And for me, it just wasn't worth the risk of having my heart, you know, having my heart broken again. And so when I tell you the heart, baby, she's been through some stuff and I still have to remind her, we're okay. We're safe. Love is safe. Life is safe. I'm constantly reminding her.
Yeah. A lot of similarities. You know, you said when someone hurts you, you shut down.
And not just from that person, like from everybody. I'm just like,
Yes. One of my toxic traits that I have worked on the last few years is when I get hurt, or not even hurt, but if I sense that something is off and it's what I would deem nefarious at worst, and maybe just, you know, a flaw at best, I tend to cut people off. And no, that is not good. It's not good. And like you said, you know, I'm going to make sure with my heart, I'm going to put up the walls and everything and ain't nobody getting in. And it's true. Ain't nobody getting in. The gag is ain't nobody getting in.
That's the gag, baby.
And the thing about being human is no person is an island. So I'm choosing to isolate myself out of fear of being hurt again, because that is a very real fear, because there's been very real harm visited upon me many, many times. And it really can harden one's heart. And my heart has definitely been hardened over the years. And I'm working on softening it now. Because no, I don't want to make sure ain't nobody getting in. I don't want to be isolated. I don't want to be alone in that way. I actually am a much more social person than people would maybe think. And I've literally always been that way. I've always been an introvert, but I always was very social. I was never shy. I was never a shy kid. I always wanted to talk to people. I always wanted to try and make friends. I just needed a lot of alone time on the back end to recharge. That's what introversion is. it's once my social battery is drained, I've got to take a break. But I had a social battery, but having difficulty making friends made it difficult as a young person. And then having friends that you would feel betrayed by later or would show that they weren't actually your friends later, that also can contribute to things. But the thing is, a heart, there's nothing, well, there are other things that are just as human, but I'm going to say for right now, there's nothing more human than your heart. The only thing that makes your heart not sort of human anymore is if it's dead, if it stops beating. As long as it's beating, it is a soft tissue, a soft muscle, and it needs oxygen and it needs blood pumping to it, which means that we always need, I'm using that as a metaphor. If I look at myself as my heart, I need oxygen. I need blood pumping to it. I need to be able to keep beating. I need support. I need community. I need relationship. I need connection. You actually need that as a human being. So us constantly cutting ourselves off because of very real, you know, for reasons, reasons, that is actually cutting ourselves off from the connection that we actually need to survive.
Because we do need people to survive.
Mm-hmm.
We need, exactly. Like you said, no one is an island. We need
That's right.
people to survive.
And we're not statues. We're not statues. We're people.
We're people. And people need people.
Mm-hmm.
As cliche as it sounds,
it's the truth.
We have to soften. And I know it's challenging because, you know, when you get your heart broken, when you're betrayed by someone that you love and you trusted, when you've been traumatized by someone that you love and trusted, it's hard. It's challenging not to build a wall. When you build that wall, not only can no one get in, you can't get out.
You can't get out.
And if you can't get out, then you cannot experience the love and the life that God intended for you to experience. Because He does intend for us to experience love. He does intend for us to experience people. He does intend for us to experience genuine relationship. But if we have these walls built up, we can't experience any of that. So if you can relate to what we're saying, I encourage you to start taking steps to soften yourself. And it's an individual journey. You have to figure out what works for you. It might be therapy. It might be journaling. It might be little baby steps of, you know, take a little bit of a break down here and befriend somebody, whatever works for you. Now we're moving on to the gut. Besides the heart, I think this is my favorite one because our gut is our intuition. Our gut is kind of like our foundation of sorts. And we have to learn to trust it. And I don't often do that. There are times when I ignore it. There have been several times. And I think of my gut as a red flag radar. Because it gives you these signs. It gives you these signals to let you know that something is not right. But what I have learned is sometimes I have to like really sit with the thing and determine if it's my red flag radar going off or is it my fear and anxiety trying to get the best of me. And so I have to sit with my gut, my intuition, my foundation in order to make a sound decision. But I will say that in the times where I don't trust my gut, I feel like that's a part of me dehumanizing myself. Not the sitting with it part, but when I know that I shouldn't do a thing, but then I go ahead and do it. I feel like when I have this nagging feeling and my gut is saying, don't do that. And then I choose to ignore it. I think that's a part of dehumanizing myself. I'm not going to say that because I don't want to be there. But anyway, that's for me. I was going to revisit something and I decided I didn't need to revisit. Trusting my gut.
Gotcha.
I decided not to revisit.
Yeah.
But Natty, what about you?
Yeah. You know, like you said, your gut is your instinct. We say trust your gut all the time. I think a lot of times, maybe not, but there might be times when people are like, well, what the heck does that mean? you know, I'm trusting my stomach. I'm not talking, we're not talking about your actual,
not your actual physical stomach. Your intuition.
Organs.
Yeah.
Organs here. As a voice teacher, I used to, when I was instructing students in classes, I would say things like, you know how people tell you to sing from your gut? And that didn't make any sense because it was just like, what do you mean by that? And I would explain to them what their diaphragm is and how their diaphragm moves and how to do that. So that's different. Trusting your instinct, trusting your intuition. And everyone has got that. Everyone has got intuition. Everyone has got instincts. And some of us might feel stuff in, you know, the pit of our stomachs most of the time and think, oh, well, that's our gut. Some people feel it in their shoulders. Mm-hmm. Some people feel it in their chest or in their who knows where. But it is an instinct that you know that it's real. And when we dehumanize ourselves, I've dehumanized myself most of my life, like you said, by not listening to that. I would hear it or feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be so many times. I mean, these are some small things too. Not going to go there with the bigger things, but the smaller things. And, you know, the long and short of it would be at the end of everything, I'd be like, man, I wish I just go with my first instinct.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I just go with my first instinct. Why didn't I just listen to my first instinct? So now I'm a lot better about going with my first instinct. It's something that I'm, you know, I've told my oldest kid, hey, going with your intuition, going with your gut, it doesn't mean that your gut's always right. Again,
right.
You're a human being.
Right.
But far and wide, by and large, your gut isn't going to lead you astray.
Yes, that's it, Maddie. That's
so you it. Can trust it. And when we learn to trust ourselves, instead of believing our minds, which have been given, fed all this information from other sources that we can't trust ourselves, we start to make overall wiser, healthier choices for ourselves.
Absolutely.
We start to make better decisions. We start to not feel so bad if we make a decision and it didn't turn out the way we want. We start to not feel so bad about it. It's like, oh, well, I guess that just wasn't it. That it wasn't the move. Oh, well, next time it will be different. Whatever. We start to act more human because we recognize that we can actually listen and trust ourselves. There was an episode that we had last year. We were talking about God and faith.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something to the effect of, I can't remember exactly how you worded it, but it was great. It was brilliant. I'm going to loosely paraphrase here because I don't remember, but you said something to the effect of like, oh, we're always being taught to like, listen to our different authorities on God and this and that and the other. And because they've been given, you know, they've been given a word from God. And this and that. You know who else gets words from God? Me. You know who else has put something in? Me. You know.
We were talking about when the Bible was written by God and inspired me. Yeah.
Yes. Like we each have that. And that thing that God has given us, that is our instinct. And we're allowed to listen to it. We're allowed to trust it. We're supposed to trust it. So I've gotten a lot better about just going with my instincts. And much like you, I'm very similar to you in that I need to take some time sometimes when my instinct kicks in like this. And I'm not someone that makes a lot of impulsive decisions.
Right.
I've always been someone that would take my time. Where I would get into trouble is I would take so much time that my mind would start to override what I was already feeling. And I would go with whatever my mind was telling me. And a lot of times that would be the wrong thing. And then I'd be like, oh, I should have listened to my first instinct. But I have never been, it's never been difficult for me to just take my time on a thing. I'd much rather take my time before I make any kind of decision. I mean, and it doesn't always have to be like, you know, give me 7 business days. It's some, you know, sometimes it's like, give me 10 minutes, give me 30 minutes, give me an hour, you know. But as long as you take your time, some people, not everyone's like that. Some people can really just make a decision on a dime and that's the way they're wired. And that's great. That's just not how I'm wired. But because your instincts, like I said, you can feel your instincts in different places. Your instincts can also function for you in different ways. For some of us, we've got to take a minute and some people don't have to take a minute. They feel that instinct and they go with it and that's fine. But I'm going to pep myself on the back a little bit. I've gotten a lot better about really just going with my first instinct most times. I'm like, wow, this is like you're really cooking with gas now, Natty. Like this is that like you're doing it. You're actually going with your gut.
Yeah. And you know, you when you were talking, you made the connection with the gut and the mind, and how sometimes if you don't listen to your gut, then your mind starts to take over. There's also the connection. Well, all of it's connected, but also with your gut and your heart. Because if you can learn to trust your gut, if you can learn to trust your instincts, it will do the protecting of your heart for you.
There you go.
You won't have to do it. So you gotta.
Yeah, because your mind is giving you all that stuff about what you gotta do to protect your heart.
Exactly.
But you're absolutely right.
If you trust your gut and your intuition, if you learn to cultivate your intuition will protect your heart. You won't have to do that. I just thought I'd
That's right. Yeah. That's it. That's great.
Ooh, this episode came kind of long. So we're going to wrap it up real quick, y'all. The last one is like spirituality, like connection to something greater than ourselves, like our higher power. For me, that's God. It may be something else for y'all. He's my source of strength. He's what I rely on for guidance and all the things. And when I neglect that, when I neglect my relationship with my higher power, I find myself getting caught up in the business of life. I find myself, when I get caught up in the business of life, getting overwhelmed and frustrated, and my anxiety goes from 0 to 100 in no time. So when I nourish my relationship with God, when I get up in the morning and I spend time talking to Him, when I meditate, when I pray, when I do all the things, I find that, I don't worry. I don't stress. I don't, get anxious as quickly when I do those things. When I schedule in or honor the schedule that I have in place to spend time with the spiritual side of me.
So very similar. Every single point that for each thing, I'm like, yeah, similar. How can I word this? I don't know how to word it. I am no longer religious. I have done what has been described, or what has been called over the last decade, as deconstructing. I've deconstructed my Christianity. A lot of unlearning, a lot of deprogramming. That being said, I still, much like you, my source is God. I still believe in God, and I still trust in the practice of prayer. I still trust the Holy Spirit is within us. So yeah, I agree. I believe that instinct, that intuition, that is the Holy Spirit. And it is important to me to maintain my relationship with that, which is really just also maintaining a healthy connection and relationship with myself, which is really the whole point of what we're talking about.
Exactly what it is.
Humanizing ourselves and seeing ourselves as these malleable bits that can be formed and reformed and evolved and developed and all of that. And that's a beautiful thing. We're not these static concrete structures that can never change. We're supposed to be able to change. We're supposed to be able to grow. We're supposed to be able to evolve. And we do that with the help of our God-given intuition and instinct. I also feel like when I've gone for stretches of time without praying the way I normally do, I do feel off.
Dang.
I just feel off. I don't feel as connected. I don't feel as embodied. So I make a point to engage in that practice as often as I remember to or think to. Again, since I'm no longer religious, I don't have any kind of dogma around that. I'm no longer dogmatic around these things. I'm not someone that's like, well, if you don't pray every day, then God's not going to bless you. Or if you don't da 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 da, then God's not going to do this. I no longer think of God as a force who is sitting at the ready to punish me when I don't do the right thing. That's not how I look at God anymore. Don't think of God as Sky Daddy anymore. Like, oh, just give me these things. See, I did the ABC and I made sure I didn't do XYZ. So now give me my stuff, Sky Santa. I don't think of God that way anymore. Me saying that I feel off when I've gone for a long stretch of time without praying, I think it just means that I start to feel more disembodied. And when I start to feel more disembodied, meaning disassociated, mm-hmm. I tend to get into my head more instead of really, really being in my body and listening to my instinct. So that's it for me.
I feel more grounded and at peace
mm-hmm.
when I make time for that part of me. I feel like the world is not crashing down on me. I feel like I can see mm-hmm. the big picture. Right, you know, that there's more to life than meets the eye, that there's more to the circumstance than meets the eye. I try to make a practice of doing it every day, but like you, I don't always get to it. But I do find mm-hmm. that when I don't do it, that I feel less grounded and less at peace. So making time for the things that nourish my soul grounds me and keeps me in a peaceful state.
Yeah, I'm noticing that the stretch of time for me before I start to feel disembodied is longer, because like I don't do this every day. I really just don't. There's besides brushing my teeth and stuff like that.
The
like,
normal
there's
stuff.
A lot of stuff yeah. that I don't do every day.
Yeah, I do it as often as, like you say, I can remember to do it, but I can tell the difference. You know, when I
right. And that's the thing. Like when you feel like, oh gosh, okay, so a week has gone by, I'm starting to get in my head more. It's like, oh wait, I haven't, because I have a lot of, I do have things. And this is funny, because like, I don't, like I said, I'm not a dogmatic person in that sense anymore, but I do still have some rituals where my prayer practice is concerned. So there are certain prayers that I make sure that I say all the time, because it comforts me to hear them. So I say them a lot.
Yeah.
So if a week has gone by and I haven't done those particular prayers, and it's like, oh, I'm starting to feel a little disembodied. So I go back to it. And then I feel, like you said, more grounded, more centered, more at peace. Even if stuff isn't peaceful, I start to feel more at peace. So I'm not saying it's bad to have air quotes rituals. That's not it, because I definitely have some of my own. But viewing those rituals as part of a practice instead of part of some kind of discipline, negative connotation, discipline mm-hmm. that you must adhere to,
mm-hmm.
that has been helpful to me.
Yes, absolutely. Same. As you all can see, there are so many ways our dehumanizing ourselves can manifest in mm-hmm. so many ways.
It's a lot. That's why it takes a long time.
So many ways. And I felt like it was important to do it that way, because like we were saying, like we inadvertently do these things. Like it's not something yeah. that we wake up thinking about, oh, am I dehumanizing myself today? No. That's not how
we're not out here trying to cause ourselves harm. Like really, let's be real.
You're just going through the everyday motions of life. And so our hope with this conversation is that you would pay more attention to it and then be more intentional in humanizing yourself. Like when it comes up, be like, okay, let me do this way instead of that way, you know, and then, you know, of course there's resting and all the things. So like I said, dehumanizing ourselves can manifest in several ways, from feeling pressure to be strong, from silencing yourself, not trusting your intuition, downplaying our
not resting,
neglecting our own needs. So it's important that we recognize the behaviors and the impact they have on our mental and emotional well-being, because when you continue to do these things, it's going to manifest on the outside. Eventually.
Yeah, it will.
It sure will. Yeah. So the good news is there's a path forward, and it starts with us having conversations like these. And just remember, you can break free. You can break free from societal norms, and you can rewrite the narratives. You can do that. You're not stuck. You don't have to live your life up the space of dehumanizing yourself. Let's foster this discipline of humanizing ourselves. And that starts with our thinking, silencing our voices, opening our heart up to love, trusting our instincts, and staying in touch with our higher power, whatever that higher power is for you. So there you have it. Our journey through the body and soul. We did the thing. Like I said, we just, you know, we really wanted to explore the ways that we unintentionally dehumanize ourselves and the steps we can take to reclaim our humanity. So you got anything before we shut it down, man? Close it out?
I think we've said plenty, and there's a lot more to say about this. So we're probably going to talk a little bit more about, you know, how we're humanizing ourselves, because I think that's extremely useful.
Yeah.
Or it could be extremely useful for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm sure it will come up again. So thank you guys for joining us today as we explore the importance of fostering a discipline of humanizing ourselves. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to the Shades of Strong podcast for more powerful conversations. Join our community on social media and our email list for content that supports your journey of growth and self-acceptance.
Like, comment, and subscribe.
Like, comment, subscribe, do the things.
Buy us anyway.
Join us for another conversation. Join us next week for another powerful conversation. Next week, we'll be having a guest on who will be talking about breaking free from the ride or die mentality. And she is Woo-hoo! All the things. I cannot wait for y'all to meet her via this podcast. She is all the things. Until then, take care of you. We're out. Say goodbye, Natty.
Goodbye, Natty.